Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive difference in the world. We explore important aspects and areas of life, including business, sales, sports, physical, mental, relationships, disabilities, and many more interesting topics. Our broadcast team so far consists of outstanding people from both Canada and the U.S., including several Napoleon Hill certified instructors as well as several authors. My name is Tom Tutall Cunningham. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter. And in March of 2012, I spoke at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker for that event. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now. And in that time, I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced, which makes me sound like a spider, and I've been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1" due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. And yet, despite those physical challenges, I'm well known for always answering amazing when asked how I'm doing. I'm also a senior research director at the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication, and we're the official and only media partner of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find out more about me at my website. It's Tom, the number 2, and Tall, TALL.com. My guest today is Aaron Alfonso, and we're going to have an amazing discussion about concussions and the impact of concussions on in sport and on people. Aaron began his hockey career at the age of 4. He played for 18 years until abruptly ending his career and his dream to play professionally after his 10th concussion. He played through injury and symptoms because that is what athletes are taught. And he earned MVP awards in every division, received an athletic scholarship, and was recognized by both the Ontario Hockey League and NHL community. Aaron achieved success throughout his entire hockey career and at age 14 was named to the Junior A Rookie All-Star team. A year later, he was then drafted 30th overall into the Ontario Hockey League to the Ottawa 67s under their great coach Brian Kilray. Aaron suffered from 4 concussions while playing for the 67s, and in his third year, Aaron was invited to participate in the Atlanta Thrashers NHL camp, and there he received his worst recorded concussion. He played in exhibition games against the St. Louis Blues, the Detroit Red Wings, and the New York Rangers. Despite the concussions, Aaron continued to play, and at age 19, he chose to utilize his athletic scholarship to play hockey at Lakehead University. There he played with his brother and majored in psychology, and he received 3 Athlete of the Month awards and gained 3 more recorded concussions. The severity of the concussions caused Aaron to suffer from post-concussion syndrome, resulting in severe migraines, light sensitivity, personality changes, lack of appetite, and eventually hospitalization. His recovery took over 2.5 years, and immediately following his last concussion, he was unable to read, underwent memory loss, was unable to exercise, focus, as well as many other symptoms. Aaron currently works at an elite athletic training facility in Orangeville, Ontario, where he turns elite athletes into professionals. Martin Luther King said that the most powerful force on earth is a made-up mind. And Aaron says, I've made up my mind to be the catalyst for change in helping athletes understand the severity of concussions. I believe in my heart that I can and will make a difference, says Aaron. Welcome to the show today, Aaron. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Hey, just as an aside, I love the Ottawa 67s. I dropped the puck at a ceremonial puck dropping for the Arthritis Society years ago. February was Arthritis Month, and I got to drop the puck with Jerry Organ, who was a kicker for the Ottawa Rough Riders, and at that time Brian Kilray was the coach, so I have a little bit of a fondness for the Ottawa 67s. Also, I lived in Ottawa for 16 years, so great team. And as we both know, Brian Kilray is an amazing man, a great coach, and extremely well-respected in Ottawa, isn't he?
Oh, that's very true. It's very true. That's quite a coincidence. Do you know happen to know what year it was when that happened?
I forget what year it was. I think the centerman for the other team was named Fox, and I think he played for the Los Angeles Kings. But other than that, it would have been some time ago, and I don't remember. So you've had, 10 concussions throughout your career.
10 recorded ones, yeah.
10 recorded concussions. And, boy, that is in the news so much these days. In the old days, and I can't even say old days because you're a young guy, so even in current times, athletes are, I imagine, encouraged to tough it out, get back in there, play again. And though I think now, isn't it, the coaches and the trainers are becoming more and more aware of concussions and probably their effect on people later in life. And so have you seen that change since you started years ago when you played hockey, which wasn't that long ago really, and even today as to, you know, how teams are treating people with concussions?
Well, definitely. I even though it wasn't a long, long time ago that I did start, it was still through that era that, you know, it wasn't really taken very seriously. It was almost taken as the same as a limb injury. And I'm really glad and I'm grateful that the awareness started to come in at the time that it was getting to be really bad for me. It's something that it's become so in your face with the hockey community right now, especially as far as like Sidney Crosby and, you know, a few other unfortunate deaths that have happened in result. They think the connections with the brain traumas, but it's definitely a good thing that they're becoming more aware of and they're acknowledging more about the long-term effects that it can bring. So it's definitely a good feeling that they're getting more involved in it.
And I think most people, unless they've suffered a concussion, they have no idea about the effects from a concussion. I know I read recently an article by a former quarterback for the Chicago Bears. Forget his name, but he was saying that if he'd known what he would have been living like now after all the concussions that he had, he would have not participated in football. He would have not played in the NFL. Tell people who aren't familiar, who just kind of know about it a little bit, what are the effects? What do you feel after a concussion?
Well, to be honest, the first couple of concussions weren't really that bad for me. They, you have to take a few weeks off. There's certain procedures that they had at the time when I first started getting them, that it was basically once you feel symptom-free, you have to have 24 hours of no symptoms, and then you can try and practice. And if you practice with symptom-free, then you're allowed to actually participate in games. Now, however, I don't really think that was more than enough recovery time at all, because the worst thing that can happen after a concussion is getting one on top of one before your first one is actually healed fully. It's definitely something that I think it's really good that they're looking into it and figuring out the correct way to take care of the concussions. But it's really something that can go long term with you if you really don't take care of it. So, you know, there's symptoms that can allow you to stop reading, like I had. You cannot focus on certain things. It just really makes a lot of things that were really easy for you really tough. So I'm just hoping that.
And even personality changes, I think, as well. There's an analyst for TSN, Matt, forget his last name, former quarterback in the CFL, and he was saying that it affects his personality as well, having retired from the CFL but having had that many concussions. that his mood can go up and down and change unexpectedly. So not only just not being able to read, but affects your personality after a while if you've had a few of them. So it is fairly severe physical effects, not only when you had the concussion, but afterwards as well, right?
Yeah, well, I think it instead of it being looked at as the concussions are causing the personality change, I really think it's more so the suppression of your feelings and your thoughts and what you're going through. And, you know, the buildup of that can result to the lash outs or the temper changement, or, you know, just your whole personality being changed. I think it's more so you actually having to go through such a trauma, and the way most athletes go through it is not by seeking help. You know, you pretty much keep it within yourself, and you don't want to admit that, you know, things are wrong with you and you can't do certain things that could eventually, you know, be embarrassing to you, or can take a toll on your ego to show people what is actually going on.
And that's probably the toughest part of the whole concussion thing and sports, is that most athletes are very determined, they're very strong, and so they would feel kind of like, well, even I have that as a disability. You don't like to pull yourself out of anything, say you can't do something.
Exactly.
And, you know, it would take so much, it would hurt pride as well as so many other things to have to say, listen, I really feel bad. I need to sit out longer. And you could look like you're not as tough as, you know, you'd like to look. And so, as with so many disabilities and things that involve the mind, you know, it's very hard to share what you're feeling when you feel the world looks up to you as an elite athlete, a super tough guy, you know, a great teammate. It's really hard to share the troubled feelings and emotions that you're experiencing. It's just not generally seen as being part of an elite athlete or a tough guy, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, that is what I think in turn starts the suppression. It starts the depression also, because, you know, you have these negative thoughts that are going through your mind constantly, and it's almost like you're letting yourself down all the time when you realize, like, you can't do certain things, like I said, that you're used to be doing no problem. It can be a real toll onto your mindset and to your pride and your ego. It's really something that has to be talked about, instead of something that you need to just keep in yourself, because it's not going to do you any good in the long run.
Exactly. And often when you're young, you don't think like 20 years down the road when you're going to be like 40 or 50. But that can be the time of life when the symptoms can really bother you on an ongoing basis. And so it's really hard to tell a 20-something-year-old to, you know, really pay attention to their concussion and make sure they're healed properly and get good medical treatment, because they just don't think of themselves as being 40 or 50 years old down the road. And all they think about is, I got to get into the next game and help my teammates, and, you know, all the pride things that come in there. And so it's such a difficult thing. Now, I would think that when you're younger, up until, let's say, you're probably like 18, or as long as you're still living at home, one of the biggest roles is parents. And so I would think parents have to take some kind of leadership to say, listen, you know, you got knocked hard and you're not playing for a while, or make sure they seek medical treatment. How did your family deal with it? And do you have suggestions for what other families can do when they have kids who are playing in sports where they receive brain injuries and concussions?
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, I think the biggest thing is instead of making an assumption on how the person should deal with it, I think the main thing that the parents should be doing is is finding out what is actually going on with the kid. You know, actually asking them what they're feeling and, you know, what kind of thoughts have been going through their mind. Because me personally, my family was always there for me. I can definitely say that they were there for me as much as I allowed them to be. I never allowed them to know the extent of the trauma that I was actually going through, and it was solely my fault that they were not there as much as I would actually like them to. But they were there through in and throughout the whole time, and that was a very, very big thing for me to actually have a support system as such to lean on and to actually turn to when things were actually really too hard for me to deal with it by myself. So I was really grateful in that sense. But it's a big thing that parents need to actually look deeper into than just what the child is giving back to them. You know, you could ask them one question and the child could be giving them one, but it's not a complete honest answer. So they should be
really
into it more so.
And yet not always a topic a parent wants to get into as to what's in their kid's mind. And yet I know exactly where you're coming from. When I was young with my arthritis, I would seek help from my parents and my sisters as little as I possibly could. But that's not always the best strategy. Again, there's a lot of pride in there, but they're your family, they're your parents, they're your brothers and sisters for a reason. And if they're supportive to start with, this is something maybe young people can, take in mind, especially athletes, that, open up to your parents, let them know if you're having these negative thoughts or bad emotions or feeling bad or, it's normal if you've had a concussion and brain injury. And yet, that, as you said, parents need to dig a little deeper than other than just how was the game. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, kids got to know that, if they're feeling or thinking things that they don't normally, hey, it's time to open up to your parents or maybe at least your brothers and sisters or somebody just for, your own protection, your own safety, and for the support. As I said, you and I both know how family support feels. If you know that your family is behind you and willing to do whatever it takes to help you, you're foolish if you don't do it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're so right. And I think that it doesn't just relate to parents and kids. It could be adults at the time that are going through these traumas. So, I mean, it also goes to friends, getting to know their friends better. And, like parents talking to their sons and daughters and sons and daughters calling their parents and talking and, spouses talking to each other. Those are the kind of connections that actually make life richer and make all of us happier and healthier people in the long run. So I think those are very big things that people really need to take in a little bit more into consideration, I guess you can say.
Right, and especially a lot of parents go to a lot of these games. If you see that your kid has had a head impact during a game of any sort, open up a discussion, talk to them a little bit about it and get into it deeper so that they know that, hey, if they're not, something happened to their head and they're not feeling right, let's talk about it, let's see what we need to do, and let's see how long you need to recuperate from it.
For sure.
Now, you experienced something not the same level as me, but with my arthritis, I used to play all these sports, and then at some point in my life, doctors kept saying, well, you can't play that, you can't do that, you have to stop that, that's not good for you. So after 10 concussions, at some point, doctors, family, pleading with you, saying you can no longer play hockey, and you played since you're 4, and you got to where, probably 1.5 million Canadian or any hockey kids get to as far as rising up the ranks. How did that feel to finally come to the day where doctors and probably even your own family said you cannot play hockey? It must been a killer.
It was definitely that. I had for the last few years before it actually was a set thing that I was done, was I had had my trainers tell me, you know, you should maybe consider stop playing. And it wasn't until doctors actually put into perspective of the long-term effect that this could have on me. It's a blessing that I was brought up with a very family-oriented family. So the idea of doctors putting into perspective of, you know, you can hurt your family that you're going to eventually have in the long run if you don't stop this kind of act. So to be completely honest with you, at the time, I felt like my world had completely stopped. My heart had dropped. I mean, hockey was my world and my life. At least that's how I thought it was at the time. I really don't know what to do or didn't know what to do because I felt like I dedicated my whole life to the sport. And I didn't really have a plan B as such. At the same time, it was kind of a relief because, like I said, I'd been playing through so much pain the last few years before I stopped. So I think it's definitely safe to say that it was a blessing in disguise. But at the time, like I said, my world had stopped completely.
Yeah, exactly. It had been your purpose and your passion since an extremely young age. And to give it up, boy, I even know just what, like giving up playing hockey, and I wasn't even that good, how it felt. So to have to give up something you have elite talent and skills at, wow, that's really, really, really difficult to do and hard to get over as well. And so, boy, I know how you kind of feel about that one. Now, we hear about, as you mentioned, someone like Sidney Crosby. Sidney Crosby's been was at a hockey for a very long time, it seemed like, recovering from his concussion. And so I often wondered, like, what does he do? Just sit around? Or how do you recover from a concussion? Do you have some... how were you able to get out of your post-concussion syndrome, and how do people recover from something like that?
Well, I definitely think, you know, it can probably vary between certain people. I mean, obviously, certain concussions and certain concussion outcomes can bring out different results. But I can only speak for myself in this sense, really. But you know, the biggest thing that I did was I pretty much secluded myself from everything. I isolated myself from a lot of things and people. You know, I tried to just stay away from any stressful environments at all. And in turn, I found out that the only thing that I could do was listen to audio. And audio was really the only thing that would not bring out any symptoms from me. So at the start, you know, I listened to a lot of music, and I have always had a passion for music, and it allowed me to escape as such, and really took me to other places than just the negative environment that I felt like I was in, that I created for myself. But the ability just to listen to the music, without the symptoms, also brought me to the idea of listening to audiobooks. And so, like I said, I was doing completely nothing as far as exercise, as far as pretty much leaving the house in any bright environment, anything like that. It was really, really tough for me. So I figured out that audio was the only thing that was working for me at the time. And I really ended up liking the soothing feelings that I got from listening to the books, as well as the advice and the teachings that the books were given to me. And they actually kind of just fell onto my lap. But I also invested in a pair of polarized sunglasses, which kind of helped the brightness of the sun and that stuff. And I got a pair of reading glasses that eventually, when I was able to read, It helped relieve a lot of the headaches that I was having. So, you know, it's a pretty good combination of just relaxing and allowing audio to come in and not stir up any symptoms.
Wow, and yet it sounds like a simple thing to do to recover, but, you know, anybody can understand that if you're an elite athlete, you're a young person, you're involved actively in life, and I've had to go through this with arthritis attacks, to sit at home and do nothing and not go out for days on end and not participate in a bunch of things you already had planned, and generally some of that's with friends and socializing. That is not an easy thing to do. People, you know, at work sometimes will say, oh, I wish I didn't have to work and I just stay at home. But when you take someone who's actively engaged in life in various levels, especially as an elite athlete, and tell them do nothing, that's a harder treatment to follow than it sounds like, isn't it?
Oh God, as easy as I can explain that to you, I can't find a way to explain to you how hard it was to me to actually give you an idea of how hard it was, because you know, like you said, I was completely active every single day. I mean, on the weekends, if I wasn't playing games, we were practicing, and we would practice throughout the week. We'd play games throughout the week. We would work out throughout the week. There was really no time, unless we were on a holiday break or something like that, that we weren't doing anything. So for me to have to result to not doing anything for over 2 years was definitely the hardest time of my life. It was, at the start, it was the worst and hardest, because it was so new to me, and I really didn't want to accept it, but at the same time, the only way I could actually get through it was accepting it, and that allowed the healing process to kind of begin.
And in the end, you know, one of the reasons I always answer amazing is I always look at, you know, the positive aspects of life, and in the end, doing nothing but still living in Canada, having meals, all your meals every day, didn't skip any, a nice roof over your head, great parents. Okay, life isn't horrible when you have to do nothing
exactly
for a few years, but you have a good life. But still, to go from full steam ahead to doing nothing is boring, it's annoying, it's aggravating, you know. Boy, we only have to stay home for like 2 or 3 days and see what crap is on television during the day to know that staying home when everybody else is busy is really boring.
Oh, it was tough. I mean, I was still at school at the start of it, so I had all my teammates still being around, and they still had games and everything, and I couldn't even watch TV. I couldn't watch TV without feeling dizzy and nauseous and my tunnel vision kind of thing feeling on my head. So it was really, really tough at the start. But it, just like you said, it was a real blessing in disguise for me, because it really allowed me to understand and to be grateful and thankful for what I do have, instead of just sitting there and dwelling on the things that I thought I didn't have and that I thought were necessities to becoming blissful and successful. You know, like I didn't really consider a lot of things, because I was just sitting there looking at what I didn't have and what I felt like I should have had. So
exactly. And when you're that close to the NHL and big money potentially and the glory and fame, boy, you could really feel hard done by when you get that close, because to get to an NHL with a signed contract is probably like one in a million, and you had got to where maybe one in half a million people get to, and we're just so close that,
yeah,
you know,
I had
feel
so many
sick
teammates.
That you got that close.
I had so many teammates and people that I had trained with and friends that I became really good friends with through hockey that had, I'd grown up playing with them and played at high levels with them, and were the ones that had signed the contracts. And that made it even tougher for me to see that, you know, it was that possible for me at the time.
Mm. not easy at all. Now, when you were listening to those audiobooks, did you come across a few great ones that you could share?
Oh, definitely. My most favorites were the Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, Deepak Chopra's. I love listening to Deepak, and The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success was another one of the most impactful ones of mine. The Secret by Rhonda Byrne. She was that. I think that was the most impactful one itself, just because it was kind of the first one that I listened to, and a lot of the teachings I know are within a lot of those other books. But you know, that book kind of started my mindset of thinking that you know, there is hope out of this. I really like Tony Robbins' books. Awake the Giant Within. The Wayne Dyer books, Manifest Your Destiny, and
I love Wayne Dyer. They
really did wonders for me. And if there was a time that I could actually get through to them and let them know what kind of impact, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that have had a lot of impact from these books, but I feel like I really didn't have much hope in any sense before I was listening to this stuff, and now it's completely done a 180 where I think completely optimistic about everything now, and I think that my thoughts can bring me anything that I want. So they have already.
Exactly.
And they continue to. So I'm very, very grateful for getting upon these books.
And that's one of the things that your experience in hockey gave you, and it's also so unfortunate, is that so many people in life never find their definite purpose, what they have a passion and a skill and a talent for. You found it in hockey, and to get to the levels you were at, you have to use your mind in a very, very, very positive way to sustain the discipline that it takes to, you know, get to that level, stay at that level, and get to the next level. So a lot of the skills that are in, and the talents and the principles taught in Think and Grow Rich and Tony Robbins and Wayne Dyer and the others, are some of them that you'd already learned just to get to where you were. As I say, like, people don't know hockey. Like, to get to where you were is like one in probably 500,000 people who start playing hockey ever get to that point. So you had learned or applied so many of the success principles to get to where you are, that even though when you gave up hockey, at least you have that reservoir inside of you that knows that, yeah, if I put my mind to it, I already achieved some amazing results. So now I just have to find a new purpose, a new direction, a new goal. And I know that if I put the same talents and skills and determination into it, that I can do anything.
Oh, most definitely. But the funny thing about it is that, you know, I definitely implemented a lot of those thought processes, a lot of the visualization aspect of things. I've done that since I was very young, and I consciously did it. I had somebody that taught us visualization and what it brings to you. But at the same time, you know, after I was taken from me, I had a lot of resentment to those thoughts, and I thought, you know, why am I doing this if it brought me to where I am? And not only was it those thoughts, but I'm a very religious person, and I had a lot of resentment towards God, and I thought, you know, like, I grew up thinking in the mentality of you ask God as a vending machine as such, you know, you ask him for something and he'll give you something. And when I had grown up, all I'd ask for is success and to be in the NHL. And when it was taken from me, like, just like that, it was really tough for me, because I didn't really understand it at all. And I didn't know what to think of it, other than what I was doing the whole time was just false and it didn't work at all. So it took me a lot of time, and it took me a lot of looking into and reading and listening to, you know, success stories and stuff like that, that people overcame situations that they were told they weren't able to overcome. And those are the kind of things that really pushed me, and I needed it to steer me in the right direction to learn more about this kind of mindset. So,
wow, and that is an amazing discovery by yourself, because a lot of young people, they don't face the challenges and the adversities that you had to face with the concussions and giving things up. And as you said, a lot of people treat God like, okay, just continue my success now to the NHL, God, and
yep.
now, oh,
yep.
God, I want to play for this team. But as you get older in life, your belief in God and your faith can often help you realize that, hey, nobody is immune to terrible things happening in their life. Christians are not immune to it. Otherwise, it'd be just like a lucky rabbit's foot. Like, I'm a Christian, so nothing's ever going to happen to me. No,
yeah.
no, we're not immune from anything. But I think at some point when you get older, and you had it happen even at a younger age because of what you went through, you come to understand that you're not immune from challenges in life. God doesn't exempt you from challenges, but instead your faith is there to get you through the tough times, not to exempt you from the tough times. And it's not like God ignored you. He lets you sometimes go through terrible things and challenges to make you stronger, to make you realize that he can carry you through those tough times, not that he could be like, okay, I'm going to heal your brain. You're not going to have any effects from 10 concussions.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't do that. Otherwise, people would just do it, as I said, for the lucky rabbit's foot effect. That's not what faith is really about.
Most definitely. And I think that God doesn't give you anything that you can't handle, even though there's certain times that you might think you can't handle it. I really believe that. So, you know, I definitely am completely back with my relationship with God, and I'm really rejuvenated in that sense.
Yes, and as you said, God doesn't give you more than you can handle, and I've used that to counsel people, even people who are dying, and you know, I sometimes joke that God must have a very high opinion of people with some of the things that they go through that they didn't think they could handle. You know, as you said, sometimes you don't even think you can handle it, but somehow God gets you through it. And so this is a great thing to experience, although tough, at a young age, because any obstacle, challenge, anything that comes up in the future, you've already learned a lot of the lessons about faith and about God and about how to get through things that you'll be able to use in, you know, many, many circumstances throughout your life. So great thing that you came to find out. And, you know, one of Napoleon Hill's success principles is learning from adversity and defeat. It's the principle I get to speak on most. And he says that on every adversity or failure, there's a seed of an equivalent benefit if you, you know, look for that seed. And so now you've looked, you've found, you're doing similar work in that you're training elite athletes, and it's something you are passionate about anyway. The fitness has to be something you're passionate about, I imagine, to get to where you were in hockey. Otherwise, it'd be a pretty awful life if you hated fitness and you wanted to be a hockey player. And so now you're working with elite athletes, training them, working with them. And so, you know, it's a new purpose, a new passion for you, maybe a new definite major purpose, Napoleon Hill calls it. But you can use all of the lessons you've already learned in life to throw yourself into that, right?
Oh, exactly. And another thing that I took from Napoleon Hill was just changing your conscious from a failure conscious to a success conscious. And the idea of, you know, you are the master of your fate and you're the captain of your soul. So those principles there, they really stuck to me once I learned them. And I got away from the failure conscious mindset that I had. And I really just think about ways in order to, or ways to make certain failures or anything to success. And I'm really grateful for getting upon that book because of that.
Now, not many people make it to be an elite athlete. You hear young people, that's when they're 7 or 8 or 9 or 10, that is their goal, to be play in the NHL or the NFL or NBA or, you know, some kind of professional sports. What was your best memory, most exciting memory as an elite athlete?
Well, I had a lot of great memories and moments as an athlete. I definitely did. But if I'd have to pick one, I'd have to say it was the most fulfilling moment that I had would have been when I scored a goal against the Detroit Red Wings when I was trying out with the Atlanta Thrashers. Detroit has always been my favorite NHL team, and also just the reassurance, you know, of scoring at that level is what I'd have to give that moment, that kind of stature to my life for.
Wow. And so few people will ever get to that point. So it's so cool to even, you know, think of scoring a goal against an NHL team that, hey, Detroit is like one of the original six. They're like Hockey Town, USA. They're always have a good team. So not only did you score a goal against an NHL team, but a fairly elite NHL team as well. So that must have been something as you'll always, always remember, and that few people will ever get to experience.
Definitely. That thought could never leave my mind, as many concussions as I could have.
Exactly. And yet at the same time, I think, like, it would feel somewhat like getting, like, you know, 8 out of 9 numbers on a lottery ticket and just missing the last one by one number. You know, you see some of these contracts, and as you said, even some guys you played with got to sign in the NHL, and you're like, gosh, I could play better than that guy.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. But at the same time, you know, there is always another lottery next week. So, I mean,
exactly.
The way I look at it is, you know, there's a lot of different ways to make that kind of money. And I'm not going to dwell and waste time on the one time or the one way that I thought I was going to make it. I mean, I can definitely come up with a few different ways that I can become successful and have enough
money. And even if you don't make that kind of money, there's so many lotteries in many different areas of life.
Yep.
The people you get to meet, the experiences, the work that you end up doing. And so the lottery isn't always money. It's often, you know, some of the circumstances that come to our life.
Most definitely.
And so now do you work with young people at all, or the athletes you work with are already professional athletes? What kind of people do you work with when you're doing training?
Right now it's mostly younger kids. They're going to be kids around the ages of, say, 7 years old to about 16, to when they're about to get drafted to the NHL, to the OHL. I mean, I have just started in this industry, so I'm definitely trying to build the kind of clientele that makes a name for myself. I'm also trying to help kids that need the kind of training and advice, a well-rounded structure of how to be a professional is what I'm trying to teach to these kids. So most of them, like I said, are around the ages of, you know, 10 to 16 roughly. But I think that's such a great age to actually get kids under you, because, you know, if they're happy with the training that they're getting, they're going to be coming back to you. And in turn, that's going to help them and myself. So I had the same thing from when I was that age. I came to a trainer that he took me under his wing, and I stayed with him till I was about 19. And so that was almost about 6 years that I was with him. So, that's the idea of what I'm trying to get to. I haven't put anybody into professional hockey yet, but I got a lot of optimistic thoughts. And I'm very, very excited for my future in this venture.
Wow. Now, the thing I can see with parents of the age group that you work with, if parents are paying money to have their kids be trained, they could probably often be the type of parents who are very aggressive with pushing their kids into being an elite athlete and might be the type of parents who would poo-poo concussions and say, listen, I'm paying good money to get you into wherever you're getting into. You're not taking a break. You're not giving up. You're not going to miss this or that. And so that's what I think sometimes when I think of, okay, if someone's paying for their kid to be hopefully an elite athlete, they're probably a little heavy on the pushing and might be the type to say, just shrug it off, get back in there, it'll get better, it's only a little bit of a dizziness.
Oh, definitely. I've seen it a lot of times throughout my hockey career. I've seen situations like that. I don't agree with it for a second. I think the parents should be putting in this money for the kids and for their joy out of it. It should never become a job as such until they're getting their stuff paid for. Then you can kind of think of it more of a job such, because you're working for something. Up till then, though, I mean, what the parents are putting the money into should be the child's joy. It should be what you're seeing out of your son or daughter. It should be the improvement of them and the actual love that they're showing from the game. And if they're not showing love from the game, then there should be really no reason why you're putting out more money than you can or more money than you feel like you should be. So I don't feel like you should ever, as a parent, you should never put it on the child that, if you don't make it, this is not going to work out, or it wasn't worth it, anything like that.
And that can happen for sure. And as you said, you've seen it, and seen it even when I was a kid. You know, parents that are more concerned about their kids being elite athletes than the kids are themselves.
Yep.
And that's not the way it should be. Your kid should be the one, you know, up early and begging you to drive them somewhere rather than you be up early and dragging them out of somewhere that they don't want to go to.
You got it. That's exactly it.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Aaron. It's such an important topic. It's very topical. It's in the news a lot. And yet, as we discussed, it's probably something that's very hard for parents, for the athlete, even coaches and teams to deal with properly, because a lot of these athletes are going for million-dollar contracts, and then a lot of them could be suffering ill effects years down the road when they have kids and a family, and their sports career is well over. And so what a tricky balance to play out, and yet it's so important to find out about what concussions are, what they do, how you recover from them, and the danger of them if you have too many, right? So thank you so much today, Aaron. I really appreciate it. Have yourself an amazing day.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it. You too.